Yeah.
Okay, good. You began your studies when you were 6 years old, and as a child, it was determined that you'd be groomed for a concert career. Who made that decision?
Actually, I made the decision. I made the decision that I wanted to start taking piano lessons. And I made the decision that being a concert pianist was something that I wanted to do. I think that my parents certainly were supportive in my decisions and were along with me. And I had the support of my teacher. So I think that all of the support that really counted the most was certainly there in my corner. But I was the one really who was enticed by the sound of music and playing and the excitement of being out there in front of people. It was a very special thing. It was something that I was not prepared for, because my first real involvement with the instrument was when I was about 4 years old. And it was as a result of hearing recordings of music and playing around on the keyboard that I really first was attracted to it. So I had no real idea that music should necessarily be a special thing in my life. I just kind of discovered it at a tender age and was fortunate to be in a situation where I could really kind of follow my heart, so to speak. So it really was a very normal, and I guess as far as music and musical careers and how musical lives and personalities and all develop, I guess it was kind of atypical in that I did not come from a musical household particularly. My parents were not involved in playing music. My parents are very sensitive to music. They enjoy it and they appreciate it. They listen to it. My father has had experience in singing spirituals. Sang with a quartet for quite a while when he was younger, before he got married. My mother has had some experience, I think, singing in school choirs and that sort of thing. But no one was involved in a conservatory situation or a university in terms of having studied and going towards playing in that respect, or even having worked with the idea of trying to have some limited career in that direction. It was just never really that kind of a thing in their lifestyles. But I do believe that there was a sensitivity and that there was a talent there that existed, and that I was passed along certain things. And I kind of discovered it, and it all worked very nicely. And fortunately for me, I had very good training. All of my teachers, and I had three major teachers in my life, were very good people. My first teacher was a man by the name of Christopher Sinjani, and he was a local teacher in the Germantown area. And I studied with him for about 6 years. He gave me a very good solid foundation and fundamentals. My second teacher was Irene Beck at the Settlement School at the Germantown branch, and she also was an excellent teacher and one who could really school me correctly. And teach me a great deal about how to play the piano as opposed to simply the rudiments of the instrument. So she came along at the right time, and I worked with her for 5 years until I was 17. At that point, then, I went to Temple University and worked with Natalie Henderis, and I was with Natalie for about 6 years, and Natalie, of course, groomed me, really, for a concert career. So those three people have played a very, very important role. But as far as the decision-making process, I was the one who really decided, and I guess I was very fortunate in that way, I think, to have made the decision for myself, because I think that I had a very different attitude then towards the whole idea of a career in music, that this was my decision, and maybe in some ways I'm spoiled because of that, because I was fortunate enough to be able to make a decision like that and not have someone else call the shots.
Well, you were awfully young when you had decided to dedicate your life to music performance, right?
Yes, I was. I was 13 when I actually decided that this was what I wanted to do.
Did you understand that the implications of the sacrifices that a musician has to make by that point in your life?
I understood some of the sacrifices. I think I understood some of the musical sacrifices in terms of the practice that was necessary and that sort of thing. I didn't know anything about the music business. I understood how to play to a certain degree. I understood how to practice to a certain degree. And I think I knew enough about that and was dedicated enough to that that I was willing to make that sacrifice to get to the next level. As I got to each increasingly higher level, I found that there were other sacrifices that I had to make. Sometimes there were monetary sacrifices. Perhaps that might be the major one. Certainly the sacrifice in time has always been something that has played a part in my life. When I was in high school, when it was the shifting of various different activities in which I was involved, my academic work, how was I going to get everything done? In college, as a music major, it was the same thing, practicing the piano, studying for other subjects. Now it's juggling between my performance activities, my teaching at the University of Delaware, and any and other all of the various kinds of things in which I may be involved.
You've built your career slowly but steadily, as opposed to another approach, which would be the overnight success that an international competition can bring a player who wins that competition. Was that a conscious strategy for you?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily a conscious strategy. I think that I, like numerous other musicians, have been probably, and I, for lack of a better term, I say victimized by the system in which we're involved as musicians. I think that certainly, like so many other pianists, I have gone the route of competitions. I've been involved in competitions from the time I was 14 or 15 years old and was actively involved until I was about 25. And during that period of time, I certainly think I won my share of competitions, but I was also involved in my share of those in which I did not place or was eliminated in the semifinals or the finals or whatever it may have been. I was very successful in competitions when I began at around 15. Everything that I entered up until I was about 21 years old, I won. And, of course, that gave me a certain degree of confidence in myself, but perhaps, too, a certain degree of disillusionment when I finally went to something that I did not win. I think most Americans identify with the story of Van Cliburn and his rise to stardom as a result of winning the Tchaikovsky competition in 1958. And because he was able to capitalize on that, he immediately was guaranteed a certain degree of success in concerts and tremendous fees and everything. But it doesn't happen that way in most instances. But I think that when I look back at the situation now and my own involvement and my own experiences, it probably was for the best that it happened the way it did. Because I began to deal a little bit more realistically with the situation. I do believe that competitions can and do still help people to achieve some success in that regard as far as getting into the mainstream of concert life. But I think that because I was not able to capitalize on an international contest, I had won state contests, regional contests, national contests, and I did place a second prize in an international competition. But I think that because I did not do better than I did, I was forced then to look at the situation in terms of how I was going to make success for myself or how I was going to have a career in spite of it. Now, again, good fortune played its cards in that situation because I was fortunate to have studied with a concert pianist who was very actively involved in her career and still is when I was in college at Temple, Natalie Henderis. And Natalie was very helpful to me in terms of being able to get some entree into the musical hierarchy. She, first of all, was an excellent teacher, and I think she prepared me very well for the competition situation. And I think, generally speaking, for playing on the stage, because I think that there are two different things, playing on the stage as an artist and playing for a competition. And I think that one of the things that she stressed a great deal was my musical independence and that I learn how to be musical and how to play what I feel and how to be articulate musically and how I express that. And that's something she always stressed. And it helped me a great deal. It also helped that she was actively involved as a pianist and that she was involved in a career that I could see how she handled her career, how she practiced, how she prepared. I think it was helpful that she was able to mention names or mention my name to others, you know, to do things on my behalf. She was very, very helpful in that regard, and I will always be grateful to her for that, because I think without that kind of interest, it can be extremely difficult for someone to, and perhaps impossible, to get a career going.
Do you see yourself as a peer of Natalie Hinderos, or is there a perpetual student-teacher relationship that you'll have?
Well, we don't have a student-teacher relationship anymore, but I think I would be very reluctant to consider myself necessarily a peer. A peer in the sense that, yes, I'm involved in a concert career, and we are both under management with the same agency, as it turns out. And in that regard, I would consider myself a peer. But I would think that in some ways, I will always be Natalie's student. I have a great deal of respect for her ideas and her musicianship. And I think that, you know, as I continue to improve and to develop as an artist, I think she continues to do the same thing. And in that regard, I think that, you know, if she were playing, I certainly would always be listening with very sharp ears to the kinds of things she was expressing.
My guest, if you're just joining us, is pianist Leon Bates. Well, you're known for your interest in bodybuilding, so right. I'll ask you probably the same dumb question everybody does. How much weight can you lift?
Well, I've been known to bench press about 300, 310 pounds or so, and various other kinds of things. For instance, in a squat, which is a situation where you put a barbell on your shoulders behind your neck, and then you bend your knees and you squat down. It's a very good exercise for developing the quadricep muscles in your legs. And in that situation, I have gone as high as about 415 pounds. Now, it's not to say that my main objective is to lift that much weight or that I lift that much weight every time I train, because I don't. The thing about bodybuilding that I enjoy is the fact that it is a tremendously creative kind of sport. And in a lot of ways, it's very much like playing the piano.
But playing the piano doesn't necessarily have the macho associations that...
You're absolutely right.
Do you enjoy that, those macho associations?
I enjoy it to death. Because what happens is, if I'm a musician, as a musician, if I go somewhere, I think I'm perceived a certain way. And if I run into people in the gym or something, I'm perceived a different way, because they have no way of knowing I'm a pianist unless they've seen my picture somewhere in relation to some concert that I'm involved with. So it's always nice to shock people. As a matter of fact, it just happened to me recently, where I ran into a fellow musician whom I did not know, but we introduced ourselves to each other, and I found out that he was playing in one of the major symphony orchestras, one with which I will be playing very shortly. And it was very interesting, because I ran into him in the gym training, and he had expressed some interest in a particular gym that was written across my T-shirt, and we got to talking about that, and he happened to mention that he was in town with this particular orchestra visiting, and I said, oh, well, I'll be playing with that orchestra very shortly. And he said, well, what's your name? And I mentioned my name, and he recognized my name, and then immediately I could see his eyes go to my body, because I was wearing a basketball tee kind of shirt and, you know, that sort of thing. And immediately he starts looking, and I had been training for about an hour, so, you know, my muscles were, I think, somewhat pumped up. And you could see the look of surprise and shock in his eyes. Perhaps it was an unconscious thing, but, you know, the thought probably went through his head, this is a pianist? And I get that reaction a great deal, especially from people who are not particularly musically involved, because maybe the stereotype of the classical pianist is of someone who may be of smaller dimensions, bespeckled, and just casting a totally different silhouette than someone like myself, perhaps, who has developed some degree of musculature, and I do come off a different way. And I enjoy that, because I think there's a message in that. And it's a message that I frequently do express, especially to young children.
Do you do particular bodybuilding exercises either to enhance your piano playing, or do you avoid certain things?
What happens with bodybuilding has enhanced my playing indirectly. I mean, I didn't set out in the beginning with the idea of trying to improve my piano playing through bodybuilding. But what I've found is, as I've been involved with it, my physical stamina has increased dramatically, my strength. But along those lines, I think my ability to transfer power to the keyboard has been greatly enhanced. My flexibility and my ability to maintain that has not been in any way jeopardized. It's been a situation where I think I've benefited from the stamina because of the concert tours. The tours are getting longer. They keep me away from home a great deal. I find myself going continuously throughout the day from one thing to another, and I have much more stamina to deal with that. I have much more stamina to get through recital programs that maybe when I was 21, 22 would wear me out physically, you know. Now I find that, you know, I could play through the program twice probably and still have energy left. It's that kind of a situation. So it's been very beneficial. The only thing that I might avoid in my training is an exercise called wrist curls that are done with either a dumbbell in each hand or with a barbell in both hands, where one flexes, if one were to turn one's palms up, you would flex the palms or your hands towards your body and then back down. And that's one that I avoid so as not to get any tightness to occur in my wrist area. But as far as all of the other exercises that one might be involved with in the course of training, I do them all. And my training program changes periodically from time to time.
Has your experience in the classical world been at all affected because you're black?
I think it's definitely been affected because I'm black. I think more times positively than negatively, although I don't think it's been exclusively one way or the other. I think that I was in many ways fortunate to find my career developing and getting off the ground in the late 60s, at a time when there was a tremendous social consciousness about black identity and that sort of thing. And I think that in many ways I was able to capitalize on that. Many people who were conscious and wanted to have a black face come in to do this, that, or the other, wanted to have a black musician on their series to come and to play here, to play there, for whatever message or whatever it might have been worth to them. And I think that I was fortunate in that way to be kind of in the right place at the right time. The only problem, I think, in that regard is that as far as the classical music world is concerned, I don't know that there is a great deal of room for that many black artists, particularly in a specific medium. Yeah, let's just say the piano for a moment. Because I think that to a large degree, there is tokenism that exists. And I believe that it would be very difficult maybe for a number of black pianists to be able to play on the same series in the same town within the same season. Because in many ways, I think we as black artists do fill certain roles. And that's an unfortunate thing. I would hope that over a period of time, that kind of thing could be eliminated. But I think that in terms of my situation, I think I was young, I was talented, and people picked up on that. I was fortunate to be visible because I was winning competitions, and I was visible at a time when I could capitalize upon it. Perhaps maybe for someone else who was coming along right behind me, who was equally talented and whatever, maybe that visibility for them may not have paid off because I was already there to fill the slot. And I think that's a reality in this music business. And I think that there have been times in my career where it's worked against me because maybe some people had an attitude that just didn't allow for them to accept the fact that I was a classical pianist. Maybe they could accept the fact that I might have been a rock and roll pianist or that I was a jazz pianist. And this is not to in any way cast aspersions on those art forms, just simply to say that some people still cannot accept the fact that blacks can do this kind of thing as well as anyone else, or anything else for that matter. So I think, you know, I had a lot of good fortune to come my way in my career, and it continues to. And I think that that was one of the things that was particularly interesting to me.
My guest is pianist Leon Bates. Do you ever pick some pieces for performances because they have, I don't know, greater visual attraction, the virtuosity of them, I guess to put it in a crass way, they have better showbiz potential?
I think it plays a part at times. I don't think that I do it consciously. Sometimes it probably plays into my decisions, especially if I'm considering maybe the last piece on a recital program. And I want to finish with a barn burner. And so I'll think, well, I could use this Liszt piece, or I could use this Rachmaninoff piece, or maybe, you know, this Prokofiev or this George Walker would just absolutely blow them away. And I think that's a very conscious thing on my part, but I think it's conscious in the sense that I am thinking of using a piece that will close with a bang. I then go through the selection process of deciding which one of those pieces that fits into that whole big bang category would be the appropriate one. But I try to avoid that in a conscious way, in the sense that I want to put together a program that I really feel I want to play. Now, of course, balance figures into the situation. I'm not going to want to go out and play all big warhorse pieces. I'm not going to want to play all pieces that are rapid and show fast fingers. I'm not going to want to play all pieces that are slow and lugubrious. So I try to put some balance together, and I don't always plan programs chronologically. I put things together that I feel musically will work very well, and I try to plan, again, around things that I really feel I want to play. Now, sometimes there are requests for certain compositions or for certain particular styles of pieces. And I'm usually doing that and obliging with no problem there. If there's a particular demand for something, I feel that the presenter in a given area knows his or her audience better than I might. And so, therefore, if they're making a decision, it's made for some specific reason. So I certainly can go with that.
Do classical pianists ever ham it up in front of an audience? You know, I mean, facial expression or swing the arms, or, you know.
I think it definitely does, and I certainly do. But I think that everything that I do on the stage is done with the music in mind. I don't think it's done with the audience in mind. I really try to avoid that kind of thing because I don't want to give people something that is not a genuine kind of heartfelt emotion. Because I don't think it serves the music. But, you know, I think that, you know, I get very, very involved. Actually, I'm a lot more reserved and play with a lot more physical economy than I did, say, 15 years ago when I was really, really emotionally outgoing on the stage and, you know, the flying hands and the head waving and the body moving all over the place. But what I found was that I was sacrificing a great deal in the way of physical control. And, of course, I arrived at this decision over an extended period of time, and I found that I was able to play just as if not more so, more effectively, by having a little bit more economy of motion. But it's not to say that my face does not reflect what I'm feeling, because it does.
Do you ever make mistakes?
Yes.
Does anybody notice?
Sometimes they may, if I should have a memory slip or something like that, and it's something that happens to everybody at some time or another, although we certainly try to avoid it as much as possible, it could be something that I might be able to smooth out or get past. And if it's something that I feel that I can get past without anybody noticing it and without it disturbing the flow of the music, then I'll certainly do that. But sometimes there's a slip that happens that there's just no way you can mask it. So the only thing you can do is stop, apologize to the audience, and start again. And in most instances, I think the audience respects you for your for being human, the fact that you're not a machine, and that while you can certainly play with a tremendous degree of correctness, I think they realize that, you know, you are fallible like anyone else. I think also, too, it's true that when you have certain musical ideas in mind and when you try to play with a certain degree of musical abandon, it's only natural that there are going to be times when you will miss notes, that is, because of that involvement. And I think that certainly that kind of thing has to be kept to a bare minimum. We don't want to be simply become sloppy. But at the same time, if one is tremendously involved in a performance and that kind of thing should happen, I don't really feel that the artist should be penalized because of it. Some people might disagree with that, and certainly I feel that some music critics disagree with that. But that's my personal feeling about that.
Well, it's been good speaking with you. Thanks for being here
today. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Dan.
Well, that was great.